The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone. Joe McCann here with Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. We did something a little special for you this week. We decided to have a MUBB happy hour. Just invited a few different people that you follow on Twitter and other places for Marquette basketball news and invited them to a Zoom chat to just talk a few topics of Marquette basketball. And we went about an hour and we had some fun. Didn't know how it would turn out. Maybe it's fun. Maybe it's just a total mess. Hope you enjoy it and hope it gets you through at least an hour of your quarantine. Enjoy.
All right. Anyway, so everybody, welcome to the first MUBB hashtag happy hour. So we got a few people in the room. You may all know from following the MUBB hashtag on Twitter or wherever you follow Marquette basketball. So what I thought I'd start with a little bit of a, I guess, a bit of an icebreaker exercise. Very simple, just to give the podcast listeners an idea of who is on the call and who we're all talking to. And you just say your name, where you're checking in from, and your beverage of choice this evening, if that is. And then when you're done, toss it to the next person on your screen who hasn't been called yet. So I'll start. So I'm Joe McCann. You know me of the Scrambled Eggs podcast on CrackSidewalks.com. I'm checking in from Fort Worth, and I am drinking my comfort beer of choice, which is a Boulevard Wheat. So now I'm going to toss it over to Phil.
Phil Bush, you know me from the worst half of the Scrambled Eggs podcast. I'm coming to you from my terrible basement in the greater Milwaukee area. I'm drinking a Dead Guy Ale from Rogue Brewing, and I will toss it over to Tim.
I'm Tim Blair. I am chiming in from Denver, Colorado, and my drink of choice is Juicy Banger from Station 26 Brewing here in town.
Let's go to Alan.
I am Alan Bykowski. I write for Cracked Sidewalks. Also, Brew City 77 on various social media platforms. And this evening, I am drinking Stella Artois Midnight Lager.
Classy.
Show I up. Will throw it next to Sam.
Yeah, Sam Newberry, Snoopy 22 on Twitter. I'm the hilariously reactionary one. I'm breaking the trend here. I'm drinking Johnny Walker Red while the rest of them drink beer. Checking in from downtown Milwaukee. Last one, we got Pat, who is the most scenic of us.
Yeah, Pat Leary, host of the Anonymous Eagle podcast, formerly with Sam, currently with Ben Snyder. Checking in from a nice little stroll through just south of downtown Seattle. May eventually find my way to a beer. We shall see. Great beer out here, as everyone knows. But yeah, happy to be here.
I love being in Seattle. I hope to visit there at some point this summer if we can ever get on a plane again.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. And I was like, oh, great. I'm going to have so many visitors. And then no one's flying.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens there. But we're going to try to keep the conversation to mostly Marquette stuff. Coronavirus may creep up with the conversation at some point or not. But thought I would start with just to close the book on this most recent season and really the career of Marcus Howard, which came to an end. So unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to play in one last NCAA tournament, maybe move up the scoring chart a little bit. And I'll just start here and just you're with Marcus Howard's career. Where do you guys think he should be placed in the pantheon of Marquette greats? How should he rank among Marquette's all-time great players?
This is Alan. I was obviously championing the Marcus Howard National Player of the Year campaign, which really rolled out right after that Butler win on National Marquette Day. We were ranked. We were flying high. We lost six of our next seven, and any campaign ended with that. When you look strictly from a statistical standpoint, he has to be considered among the top players all time. Top five, I would say, relatively easily, just because the records that he put up, the marks that he put up, are likely never going to be touched.
I think you have to give it a specific number. Specific number.
We don't necessarily narrow down a specific number, but it is.
Have some courage. Number.
In terms of my time watching Marquette, I would say second behind Wade. I'd put him ahead of Jay Crowder simply on the basis that he made first team All-American and Jay didn't. He stuck around. He was here. And while the team never lived up to what we all would have liked to have seen from them, I don't think that you can really put that on Marcus. Imagine what this team would have been this year without Marcus. We wouldn't have been an NIT bubble team. Marcus made this team what it was, and it was just because he was that good. It just is unfortunate for him that he had what he had around him.
What do you think of that, Tim?
I think Marcus is a top 10 player. I don't know that I would go top five. I think he'll look better and better as time wears on. How about 3 weeks into the next season when Marquette can't score very effectively and you realize how easy it was to watch a gentleman throw up 30 a night? We'll never see something like that again. The program never reached the kind of heights, obviously, that he did individually. I think top five is pretty high, but I think also if he goes on and does anything at the professional level, that would certainly help. I mean, I'm a big Doc Rivers fan, and Doc has his number retired, but is Doc a top 10 player all time at Marquette? His teams didn't perform particularly well, but he's remembered very fondly. Because he had some real high moments at the institution and beyond. But I'd say Marcus, in some regards, is clearly a top 10 player. I'd have a hard time putting him top five. Alan, I've got a couple decades on you, so that's the way that
The difference for me is I didn't watch Butch Lee. I didn't watch Doc Rivers. I didn't watch Dean Memminger. I didn't watch Jim Jones. A lot of the guys that would probably be in those conversations weren't exactly in my wheelhouse because – the 77 in my moniker stands for the year I was born, not the year I went to Marquette.
And not to date you, Tim, but I really appreciate your interest because everyone else on the call really is essentially the cream buzz Wojo era. Sure. And really not a whole lot of knowledge. You know, everything else we just know by reading, you know, history books or YouTube videos or whatever.
Well, I'm not too much far gone. I mean, look, I'm a 91 grad and I was sort of there during a difficult transition for the program, but you know, the way the program's performed since my graduation, frankly, has been awesome, but I still think you can look back to players I never saw, Memminger and the like, and Marcus would, I would imagine, compare very favorably, you know, going back to that. And I agree with Alan, it's awfully hard to hold one player responsible for a program's inability to break through a ceiling.
Yeah, I wonder how much, like, retrospectively, because I think, and maybe Sam or Patrick, you can speak to this more than I can, but I think there's definitely a level of, I'll say, Twitter bro that is a Marcus hater. There's definitely a portion of the fan base that don't look on his era fondly. They view him as a ball hog, a shoot first, me only guy, right? And I'm curious to see how the view of Marcus changes. Because I would put him fourth. All time in my lifetime, right? Of my lifetime, I would put him fourth. But there's definitely a segment of the fan base that is certainly not pro Marcus. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say they hate Marcus, but there's definitely a group out there that view him as a ball hog.
Yeah, I mean, I will admit that I didn't even realize Marquette existed until the start of or in between my junior and senior year of high school. So, to make you guys feel all really old, I was a freshman at Marquette in the fall of 2012. Pat's what, 2 years ahead of me? Pat, correct me.
Just one, boss.
Just one. Okay. I'm making Pat older than he is. But
it's okay. I feel old sometimes.
So I knew Dwayne Wade, and then I came into the Elite Eight team was my freshman year. So Vander Blue the year after Jay Crowder, DJO, a couple years after Jimmy Butler. And then the cupboard was bare for a couple of years. You know, you got Henry and you got then you got Marcus, basically. And so Marcus, for obviously I don't have the, I've known about Marquette my entire life. I don't have the, you know, my dad, while a college basketball fan when he was growing up, could talk about the Marquette teams. He was like, oh yeah, Al McGuire. He knew Al McGuire. He knew like Butch Lee, but he didn't really know much else. So Marcus has to be a top three for me just because of what I've been exposed to. But I think a lot of those people, Phil, that you were talking about, the it's cool to hate on the ball hogs and stuff, are also the same type of people that get really mad that you're not playing basketball the right way and advanced stats are BS. And I think there's that Venn diagram is very tightly close to a circle. So I think it's very much people who do that are very much doing a disservice to an incredible, not just an incredible basketball player, but an incredible face of a program and a university. I mean, for better or for worse, people know Marquette because of their basketball team for the most part. And Marcus Howard was the face of that basketball team. And you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, I kind of agree. So jumping off of what Sam just said, I mean, Marcus was a bigger deal than anybody, any one player. Like Sam said, I showed up at Marquette fall 2011. And having been around the program, basically, I lived in Milwaukee until this past year or so, that whole time. I mean, he was bigger than any one player that was at the school at any point during that time, by far, in my opinion. I know Jay won that Big East Player of the Year my freshman year, but you never got the sense that he was any bigger than the team. He had a great year that year, and obviously has gone on to be a sneaky, awesome professional basketball player. But at the time, you never felt that he was like overwhelmingly better than DJO or any of the key members of that team. And, you know, when you get fast forward to this year, Marcus is leaps and bounds better than any other player around him. And while, you know, a lot of those players really struggled and took a step back, especially towards the end of this year, they're Division I caliber talents. And it was just always apparent that Marcus was so much more competent than all of them. For me, you know, obviously doing some guesswork about stuff that happened before my time. But as far as like a singular star goes, it's hard for me to imagine anyone matching what he meant to Marquette besides Wade, just based on, despite the fact that those teams didn't win at all.
I mean, they won a couple.
Everyone knew him as Marquette, but. Yeah, like I mean,
going off what Pat was saying about, you know, the way I think Crowder's legend has grown, you know, since he's been in the NBA, how much do you guys think Howard's, let's say, should be this way, but how much could Howard's, you know, place in market history grow if he were to have a surprisingly good pro career, which people aren't necessarily predicting that for him right now, but we've been surprised by much more in the NBA. Like, say Marcus Howard has a nice NBA career and sticks on roster for a while, with that elevate him in some people's minds or change some people's mind who maybe don't view him as that right now?
I think NBA success is always going to elevate a player. Wade is the perfect example. Don't get me wrong. I was at Marquette when Wade was here. I was at the Elite Eight game when they beat Kentucky. That was my wheelhouse for my, you know, my formative years as a Marquette fan. But if Wade doesn't go on to become, at worst, what, top three shooting guards in NBA history? Do we have that same memory of him? Is he remembered at that same level? If, say, 3 years after his career starts, he's petering out of the NBA and just becomes a rotation guy. That's always going to factor into how a player is remembered long term, no doubt.
Well, I mean, like, take a look at, I think the even better, I agree with you, but I think the even better example is JFB, right? Like, Jimmy Butler didn't achieve, like, peak Jimmy Butler until he was in the NBA. Like, he was great his senior year and even part of his junior year. But, like, I would make the argument that whatever he did at Marquette, like, he doubled when he went to the NBA, right? Like, there was no way you could project where he was at Marquette and where he ended up in the NBA.
I'm not sure, like, Butler may have only been considered the best player on a Marquette squad in his last season.
Right.
Right.
I think that's a really good point because, sorry to cut you guys off, but when I showed up on campus, it was right after that season had finished up where they had upset Syracuse. And the team showed up to get their rings because the NBA was locked out. And when I was there in my freshman year, I mean, there wasn't like this whole ton of buzz about Butler being some like transcendent star like Wade. And I think he's totally put it together in the years since by becoming this incredible pro. I think there was like a 3-year period where it was like, oh, cool, he's a Marquette guy in the NBA. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, I mean, he's one of the best guards in the entire league, and he's a perennial all-star.
We have a new member of the chat, by the way, Ben Snyder, welcome in. I know
Twitter, what up, nerds,
has made it tough for you to join, but thank you, glad you're able to join us. Just to catch up, the current topic we've been discussing, Ben, has been Marcus Howard's place in Marquette history. I know you would like to chime in on that before we
I've got a hot take. I think Marcus Howard is a pretty damn good player. Anyone else?
This is fantastic podcasting right there. I mean, that's
God. You begged me to come in for the takes, and here I am, just coming in hot.
Man, and to think I had only gotten a hold of you on Twitter.
Safe to say his number should be retired, even though Marquette seems to have probably too many numbers retired. But if he's only the fourth consensus All-American in school history, should zero be hanging up there?
No brainer.
I'm very pro.
Yeah.
Number retirement for just anyone who's remotely good. Like, I grew up a Kansas fan, obviously, and just they pretty much put anyone's number up there. And it's less about like the legendary status to me, more or less than just acknowledging a really damn good player and putting all that memory into a physical thing that you can see on the rafters. So I'm very pro jersey retirement.
Well, and the jersey retirement, I just think about the like bringing everyone, the community back together a couple of years, like, because if you think about the way Howard's career ended, I mean, we could go full Arby's beef and cheddar and say they weren't going to win or they weren't going to whatever, right? But like, it ended on a wah-wah, right? So like bringing the community back together a couple of years from now to retire Howard's number and recognize what he did, like I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Yep.
It's just going to be really terrible when we do that in 2 or 3 years and the zero goes up there and that's the same number of wins we have in the Big East.
Ouch.
So.
Oof.
Damn.
Oh. Sam.
Damn.
To be fair,
DePaul isn't leaving. We can get one off them. We can get one.
Extend Dave Lano forever.
There we go. Thank you, JPL. Thank you
forever.
Thank you.
Now, transferred from DePaul recently, by the way. Aren't they? They're going to be bad next year.
Jalen Coleman. Lance is leaving.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
JPL left. Reed left.
Paul Reed went pro.
They landed that D2 kid though. Corvassier.
There it is.
One of the best names I've seen in a while.
It's beautiful.
I was kind of like shift the topic into next year. So now we hopefully, if we're playing basketball next year, begin the post Marcus Howard era coming up in the fall. To me, it's tough to even put an expectation on this team because I really don't know what the roster is going to look like exactly yet. I mean, I hope DJ Carton is going to be eligible either because of NCAA rule changes or because of a waiver. How much does his eligibility maybe shift expectations for you guys for next year? I'll start with you, Phil. Sam had his hand up. Sam had his hand. We're going to start with Sam.
No, I was going to say that I can hot take about us not winning the Big East and make some jokes about it. But I don't think I've been more sincere when I've said this than this roster needs him to be eligible next year, like in a real, real bad way. You know, not only is it, you know, we can talk about how, you know, the rest of the team sans Marcus finished the year and our expectations for them next year, but that Athletic article that came out, what was it, this morning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they're like, Kobe McEwen needs surgery that was put off the entire year, and Theo John needs surgery that was put off the entire year, and like Wojo tried to convince him and his family to redshirt, and
Greg Elliott
needs his 19th surgery in 3 years, and like,
can you get a discount at this point? Like, does Aurora just discount?
Your punch cards at 12 right now?
But like,
you get your third surgery and a Jimmy John sub free.
And so I can't pronounce his last name. Dan M on Twitter, who I have been following for a long time. You guys have mentioned him.
Massajewski?
Yeah. He was like, maybe it would be a good thing if the season doesn't start on time because all these people are hurt.
Yeah.
And they can't have surgery because the challenge of having elective procedures done.
Right. Well, that was the thing I hadn't really thought about that was pointed out in that article, is that
right.
You know, Theo and Greg and certainly Kobe probably all would have had those surgeries middle of March.
Right.
And now
right.
They may not be able to have them until May or June.
Well, so not to get all doom and gloom, a little inside knowledge. So Marquette is partnered with Aurora. The Aurora Sinai is right there by campus. It is in the Milwaukee area, is one of the most hit hospitals from a COVID perspective. So that hospital will not be doing elective surgeries till at least July at this point. Hopefully, like from a partnership standpoint, they can go to one of the other Aurora hospitals. But yeah, I mean, we're best case scenario, we're talking mid-May for elective surgery starting, and there's a huge backlog. So I don't know what kind of like pull Marquette has, but yeah, getting them in is going to be
right. Well, and like
we should consult with Andre, Marquette's resident Twitter physician, to determine that.
I don't think we're going to see any college sports until 2021.
I've mentally said goodbye to sports in 2020.
I agree with that take.
I don't think that's even a hot take.
It's the Big East season, Alan.
Here's the thing. You're not going to put games out. You're not going to put athletes on the court. You're not going to put students in the stands if campuses aren't open. And all it takes is one campus not being open to torpedo the sport. If you have a single governor in a state with a couple of D1 schools that says you aren't having in-person classes until the beginning of the spring semester, until January, you're not going to see those schools putting anyone out there. So if suddenly Marquette, Wisconsin, Green Bay, Milwaukee are all shut down, that's three leagues that are going to have to make a decision about whether they start their play on time or if they hold things off until those schools are able to play. And I think you're going to see leagues come together around their member schools, which is going to push the entire season off until January at the earliest.
UConn is kind of already, they've kind of started to put out some feelers about that, haven't they, UConn?
UConn
really wants the football season to be canceled for certain other
reasons. Well, think about it from a budgeting standpoint. I'm not gonna disagree from a public policy standpoint, but you got to look at the other side of things. The financial pressure. I mean, Marquette's already got a $15 million shortfall this year. Basketball being now, this is where it's good that we don't have football, but basketball being canceled, like, you might kill non-revenue sports and some universities cease to exist in the sporting realm if they skip the 2020 season.
Just to interject here. So having grown up where I did, which is in farm town, Southern Illinois, there's a bunch of D3 schools down there and like NAIA schools down there that have already released all of their athletics, scholarships, staff, everything, because they just don't have the money to justify even like, it's not just like Marquette's already not like hosting camps all summer. Marquette's already like probably going to have to deal with a lot of budget cuts in non-revenue sports next year. And Marquette's a D1 institution. Yep. There's D3 schools that have lost everything.
Cincinnati shut down soccer altogether. Yeah.
But institutions themselves will really struggle too. Think about the probably more than $10 million, I would imagine, at least that Marquette's already had to refund students on campus who left for room and board. There will certainly be some type of collateral damage as it pertains to your ability to hold together a class of that's full up for freshman admittance. There'll be a number of students who will not be able to return. On top of everything else, I mean, the institution more broadly is really going to have a very difficult time for a long time, regardless of what happens with whether or not basketball begins in November or January or February. Very lean times for our beloved alma mater.
Well, I think I said this on the last time Joe and I potted, but if you think about it from like the larger institution, and this goes back to Wojciechowski and all that stuff, right? The university is not, and I had some back and forth on Twitter with some folks. I don't think the university is going to be in a position to find ways to spend money on things that aren't mission critical. Like they've got the B school that they're trying to set up. They've got funding that they've got to keep the university going, right? The endowment's taking a hit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
That like they're just trying to keep the lights on in 2020. You know, so
that ties into, I think it was reported by the Journal Sentinel last week, week before. It was like a record low number of applicants to the university. And you can probably tie that back to everything else going on in the world.
Yeah,
right. I'm trying to remember. I'm so old. When do seniors accept their college admittance? Like
May 1.
It's been extended in some regards, but May 1. But the yield on offers this year is going to be a real challenge for those missions pros.
I even saw an article, or not an article. They did a story on the news, the one day in the last month I've actually watched the news because, you know, depression.
He's not wrong.
denial, it's not just a river in Egypt. But they did a story on like, should your kids take a gap year?
Yeah.
You know, so like if people are taking, like if that becomes the norm, again, to bring this back to Marquette basketball, like lower freshman class next year, less revenue, more impact on student tickets, right? You think we're complaining about student attendance the game this past season. Wait till next season, right? Like if they have in-person games.
To quickly piggyback off of Phil real quick, let's say every single person on Marquette does take a gap year this year. Who would be the most likely to find themselves in Europe and never come back?
From a basketball standpoint?
No, just from a personal standpoint. Just like, oh, I found myself in the mountains. I'm just going to become a villager.
Kobe McEwen? or am I just trying to will that into?
I was going to make a reference to maybe because we paid him to stay, but I can't. I wouldn't want to do that. That seems
low key. Theo John strikes me as a guy who would like really love peyote or something.
Joe, when you set this up, was this where you were hoping we would go?
I tried to get off coronavirus and talk about doing drugs,
that does help us bring it back to where the conversation started, which was we're talking about who this team could lose. We tossed out Kobe, and we were also talking about, oh God, we just hope that the season doesn't start on time so they can all get healthy. That coming back to the original point, DJ Carton needs to be eligible for this team. He's a day one starter for me.
Yeah,
he absolutely
like, that
is.
That was like 15-minute detour to you answering the original question.
Yeah.
Of what is Carton going to do next year? And we went on.
He's a day one starter
there, but I agree, Sam. I think like the difference between having Carton and not is probably for me bigger than it realistically should be. But to me, it's like the difference between I'm looking at certain NIT. I just hope we make the NIT, like go 500 to, I think they could be a tournament team.
Carton is one of the three best players on the team, I would argue.
I'd say the
other two being without a doubt.
Sure. But the other two being hopefully Dawson Garcia, if he's everything that we're expecting. And Brendan Bailey is the best
returning player.
As long as he doesn't stay in the NBA draft.
Obviously.
I mean, it's going to be first.
I have to imagine he'll be back.
I hope you're so right. He's just, I think it was Sam that was, and others have pointed out on Twitter, like he's a guy who's, a 22-year-old junior right now. I think he turns 23 this summer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's probably ready to be a professional basketball player if he has that opportunity. So he just wants to see where he is.
Yeah. Another thought with him, and this is, I know, the most corny point about him because it gets brought up by every announcer, but his dad was a 14-year pro and works for an NBA team. So was probably getting a lot of advice on, and, you know, growing up as the son of an NBA player, probably was quite a focus for him to figure out what he has to do to sort of follow in his dad's footsteps, at least to a certain extent, is my guess as part of that, on top of the fact that he's older.
I would make the argument that every single player for every single college team should do this, right? Like, if you even have any smidgen of interest in playing the NBA, there's literally no repercussions for doing this. So like Brendan, I would think Brendan's going to be the most informed because, like you point out, Pat, like he's got the people, he knows what it is. He's got all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, but like every player.
I think kind of what Pat was getting at there, because his dad has so many NBA contacts in today's world, it's much easier for Brendan Bailey to do virtual visits now, probably, than most college prospects. He's probably, I guess college athletes can, have a relationship with an agent now to help them guide them through the process to keep their eligibility. But still, Thurl Bailey probably has a lot more contacts and knows a lot more people who can just say, hey, could you just FaceTime with my son? Or, hey, we're going to send you this workout we did in our backyard. Could you give us some feedback? And so he probably has a few more avenues to get feedback than most of the underclassmen who have declared and are trying to get feedback.
And I have a take on not just that.
Yeah, that was a good point. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was going to say, purely from a skill set perspective, you know, we can talk about how he actually performed, the sometimes deer in the headlights type of stuff, the absolute lack of confidence at certain times. Purely from a skill set perspective, he was probably the best NBA prospect on last year's team. The combination of foot speed, defense, rebounding, shot, maybe not shot selection, but he shot, you know, over 40% from three, or close to 40% from three. You know, like, he's a prototypical, it's like a poor man, why am I blanking on his name? The wing from Villanova, Mikhail Bridges. Yeah. He's like sort of a poor man's Mikhail Bridges. All the athleticism's there. He has better foot speed, and is a better defender than Jamal Cain. You know, of the NBA prospects, besides maybe Sakar, he would be the one that has the skill set to stick. So nothing about him declaring just to get an opinion surprises me. I have a hunch he's going to stay in. That's just a me thing. I don't have any sources or anything. But I don't know. Everything right now is aligning such that it doesn't make sense, or it makes sense for him to come back, obviously, but everything's aligning such that there will never be a better time for him to go pro than this draft.
There is also something how many big wings that are on the team as constructed. So there could potentially be a logjam for him if he does return.
The one thing you could say, I heard someone cough Kareem Mané's name a little bit ago, and I guarantee you a reason why he's no longer considering, well, I mean, he still technically has the option to consider college, but a reason why he's considering the pros over college right now is because, like we talked about, there might not be a college season next year. And if you're on the borderline of go make money and maybe don't get your name out there in the same way as a typical college model, but when that option isn't a guarantee, you really do have to make a crucial choice. And I think part of what informed Mane's decision and what is potentially driving Sam's hunch about Brendan is option to make money as professional basketball players. They might just have to sit their butts for a year and then you know, they've wasted an entire year and have no, you know, clear development and may even regress as prospects if either they, you know, wait a whole year and then try to do the same thing over again, or try to go pro and have had this whole year where they weren't doing anything because they didn't make the decision on the front end.
Yeah, right. Real quick to add to that, isn't 2022 the year that theoretically they're talking about the NBA would eliminate the cap on when you can go pro?
Right. Yeah, so I think that's Bill Simmons calls it the double draft year.
Right.
When he talks about it.
It's so to your point, Patrick, that means they have one more year. Sorry, they'd have one more year because 2021 they could still declare in that year and it would be a single draft.
Yeah.
It's the 2021, 2022 prospects, the high school class of 2021 that would be eligible to go potentially. That's assuming the NBA Players Association went along with it.
I have one more random thought off of that too. Mainly because we've all been starved for sports. You know, some baseball teams in Korea are starting to do their spring training and play in front of no fans. There's a chance that just because of, you know, I don't want to bring politics into this, but just because the U.S. being so hard hit by this and we haven't ramped up to where other countries are yet and their responses, there's a chance that those pro leagues open for business before the NBA does. And there's a chance that Brendan Bailey, Kareem Mane can go make money and not have to waste another, like everybody else is saying, there might not be a 2020, 2021 college basketball season, or it might not start until January, February. You could go make $250,000 for a year in Italy or in, maybe not Italy, but in Korea or in.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's kind of like the point Pat was getting at is, like, say, even if college basketball season is delayed, and there is a season, but like say Kareem and A is the guy you keep bringing up, maybe he can't get on a college campus until January. So where's he training? Right. Whereas in a normal circumstances, he would be wrapping up his high school coursework right now and be on a college campus in June, working out with his new team where he would have, wherever he would go would be with, you know, professional trainers and you know, athletic trainers and coaches who know what they're doing. So he would get that high level work in as soon as June. But if he can't get on a college campus until January, if he's just training on his own between now and then and he can get paid for it, why not take a paycheck? That's why for me, I think Mane's off the table. I would be shocked if he went to college.
100% agree.
Well, and what's interesting is like what happens this season, like, so whether this season gets played or not played, it almost feels like, not to go back to Joe's very painful but salient point around like excuses around the Wojo era, but like there are so many extenuating circumstances this season, so you automatically grant a year or two extra, right? Like we're going to be in a decade of Wojo before you know it, when without any like necessarily defined success.
That is not the best place to take that optimistically. Let's not go there. That was unnecessary and did not need to be said.
Let's not go there yet.
Before we dig into that, I want to say I don't think that Mane is completely off the table for the reason that if he wants to play in the NBA, having nothing but footage of him playing against Canadian high school players probably isn't going to be the best audition video.
No, I definitely get what you're saying there, yeah.
Yeah, if anyone's going to benefit from playing in college, it's someone who could potentially come in, have a, because it's a Marquette comparison, Dwayne Wade type season, and then get drafted on the basis of that single season. Right. I assume he would be a one and done, but I don't think that him going right now is automatic because I don't think that he's going to get drafted with the resume he has and the inability to do in-person workouts and get a better evaluation at the NBA level right now.
I can agree with that. He just may just decide, look, I would rather play in the G League or play in New Zealand, even if it's for a much lower salary than what, you know, Jalen Green got. Obviously, you know, Jalen Green's high profile. He's getting $400,000 to play in the G League.
He's not eligible for that program.
But
Mane can't play.
But he could go
play
to
the G League, but not in that program.
But okay, but still, like, even if he goes to the G League and makes $40,000, you know, it, maybe that's worth it for him as opposed to going to college.
It could very well be. Yeah.
Well, let's pretend we're living in Sam Newberry's anti-fantasy world, and
you hate him.
Brendan comes back.
I never said I wanted him to be gone. I just have a weird hunch.
No, I understand. I understand. So Brendan's back. DJ Carton is eligible, and Kareem Monet comes here. What's the starting lineup, and what is the expectation for
Brendan
that
Bailey, Player of the Year?
Final Four.
Wow. Okay.
No. No. I think can make the tournament. I think the starting lineup in that situation would be certainly Carton and Monet and Garcia, because they're not. I mean, Monet and Garcia aren't going to Marquette to ride the bench. So it would be certainly Carton,
yeah,
Monet, Bailey, Garcia, and Theo John. That's your starting line.
Wojo absolutely starts a healthy Kobe McEwen for the first like 10 games of the season before.
I think McEwen starts over Monet.
McEwen has – no, like – everything I know about Wojo is McEwen starts on that in that backcourt at least until he like forces himself to be stapled to the bench.
Well, what do the analytics say? Let's go the opposite direction.
Remember the Purdue game is what he's going to say for the first half of the year,
or just like, hey, this is my senior, I got to go with him. Like, you guys got to earn your stripes. It's like that kind of like BS coach talk. Yeah,
I'm so with Kobe's Pat. Worked really hard to be a part of this program, and you know, he's a great competitor, and we really like him.
Meanwhile, Jamal, we think he's Quincy McKnight. Nailed to the bench.
Yes.
Ben's favorite point guard in the Big East this past year was Quincy McKnight, and for him to compare Kobe to him today in that article that we talked about near the top, it was – I can't even imagine the feeling.
I was about to throw things.
Yeah, I mean, that's torturous for you.
I replied this to Pat, but, like, you could clearly see that Wojo was scanning through familiar faces that were transfers that had one bad year and then one good year, and that was the basis for his comparison.
That assumes an awful lot of, like, actual work and intent ahead of the game. I think he was
no, just I was going to say, like, good for him for, like, at least, like, matching up a comparison, and I think he might have just gotten lucky with the similarities. He probably just pointed at effective point guard that he would rather have on his team other than whatever he got this season for Kobe.
Yeah, like, but
hey, yeah, that guy's good.
That's true.
Comparing Kobe McEwen to Seton Hall's best player is quite the stretch, in my opinion.
Hey, Sandro is really mad about that comment. Sandro is
don't say that about
Sandro has entered the chat.
Mauro Gill would like a word.
Dude, Miles Kale is going to have a great year coming up, I'm telling you.
You'll need him, too.
Tim, what would your expectation be under the roster Phil just threw out there?
Well, back to the Kobe point, I mean, while we're all indicating that we think maybe Monet might be a better player, this is also a reason why he just may not come, because the truth of the matter is Kobe will have been on campus for 2.5 years before Monet would show up. Say they don't start games until January, Kobe will start. Because there's probably very little chance that Monet could have even practiced enough over a period of time to actually become the kind of high-ceiling talent that everybody knows that he would be. So it's not actually out of the realm of possibility that would be the legitimate best case for the roster at that time. But I think back to Monet, it also, if you're a high-ceiling talent, why would you roll the dice with an uncertain environment to not get paid and sit through class versus other options that would afford you an opportunity to make a living? You have a perishable skill. Go make money for somebody beside the coach who's coaching you.
And the good news for Kareem is that he has all summer to make that decision. He can make that decision August 1st if he wants.
Exactly. I mean, there's no rush on him. I mean, he can play the long game, and it's great to hold all the cards in that regard. It's really good for these young men to not have to be forced to make these kinds of decisions like so many others have had to in years past. But I think Kobe would still start for a while. Why not? See how it goes. Because also, I wonder, would Kobe be the point guard? If Carton is eligible, wouldn't Carton be your alpha guard with the ball, playing Kobe more off the ball? Marcus thrived in that environment being off the ball this year. Kobe struggled with turnovers and whatnot as a point guard. Could he be better as a two where less of the decision-making and less of the pressure was present on him? He might be. Not sure, but it's probably something worth experimenting with if Carton is eligible.
Ohio State did that with him a little bit. Sorry, Ohio State did move Carton off the ball at a point a little bit. My worry would be more that Kobe's turnovers are an issue for him as your primary ball handler. He had some games where he distributed really well, but he had other games where, I mean, how many times did we see the Kobe rocket to the fourth row of the stands pass? You expected it at least once a night.
You know, the backcourt last year was really bad outside of Marcus. I mean, plus Torrent struggled. You hope that he can make more of a leap, but you're right, Alan. But I think the hope is that if Carton's eligible, he fixes a lot of those problems. And he's a different kind of player than Marcus. And Woj ran a system last year that was wildly different than they ran in the backcourt the previous season. So he has more interchangeable parts, but if they're turning the ball over 25% of the time, you may need to go back to the toolbox that he referenced in the podcast.
The one thing that I would kind of like to see Wojo potentially do with Carton is do something of a dual ball handlers lineup to try and minimize some of the turnovers that Carton and McEwen both have, where you see a combination of Symir Torrence and one of those two guys be responsible for initiating the offense. It's something that I don't really see as much. I think back to the Kansas team with Devontae Graham and Frank Mason, and even the Marquette team with Rousey and Howard, where if the defense has to focus on two different guys potentially driving to the basket, going off a pick and roll or something like that, it makes it a lot easier or a lot harder for them to really effectively defend, especially if at least one of those guys can pull up and hit a jump shot off the dribble. So I would love to see Symir and Carton be utilized more as a lineup if that's what it ultimately comes down to.
And there is a lot of lineup versatility there if everyone that we've mentioned is on the roster next year. And even without Manet, it's still interesting to see how he would juggle a healthy McEwen, Greg Elliott, and Symir and Kobe McEwen. Just juggling those guys, I think.
And that's not even talking about Dexter Akano.
Yeah, we don't even know what we have in him right now.
Right. Yeah, Wojo was really positive on Akano in that athletic piece.
Yeah.
More so than I thought, more so than I expected.
He certainly was. We're still talking about a sub 250 rated player coming out of high school after his prep year who redshirted because I assumed that they didn't expect much from him. I loved Sakar Anum. He did fantastic things for this team. The number of guys that go from lowly rated to redshirt to what Sakar became is virtually an impossibility. You almost never see that other than inexplicably at UW-Madison.
Oh, God.
Sakar has a crazy high school background, too. I mean, if you looked at what Sakar was doing, Sakar, I think, won 4 state championships in Minnesota as, like, the best player at De La Salle. So he's insane. And, you know, as a high school player, and obviously that was probably a factor of he could use his athleticism to score well. And he didn't really round out the, you know, skill elements of his game that he, if you hear any of the sub 2 feet talk. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Greg Elliott was really like a kind of an out of nowhere, like no one had him ranked and late commit that kind of offers some precedent for how a lower rated player can succeed in Wojo's system.
Well, you know,
if it's Greg not was, apples to apples.
Greg was weird because he played in the same high school programs, a couple higher rated recruits. And so it was harder for him to sort of show off his game. But it was like, he was a late commit. It was like a May commit or early May or late April commit of his senior year of high school. Yeah. And he was in kind of like Manet, where he was sort of like skyrocketing up boards internally, but there wasn't really a lot of on-court results. You know, people could see the potential, but there wasn't a lot of like, I think it was the David DeJulius, did he play on the same high school team as the guy?
Yes.
Yeah. So he was playing behind some guys who are other top-rated commits. So I think that he was more of a slept-on candidate versus sort of, you know, Sakar sounded like the alpha on his high school team.
Well, Greg was an alpha on his high school team, and I just looked him up. 28 points a game as a senior and was a finalist for Mr. Basketball. So, I mean, he really exploded as a senior, but right. For whatever reason, he was lightly recruited till late.
He also had an offer from Michigan State. That was who we beat out to get him.
And Rob.
Well, we just traded him for a player to be named later that turned out to be Joey.
Yeah.
Oof. Oof.
Ouch.
Oof. Tough deal. It's a tough deal.
Too soon.
Well, hey, guys, I said we try to keep this to an hour. We've been going about that for now. We could probably literally talk about Marquette basketball for 2 or 3 more hours. But I know you guys got stuff to do. So thanks, everybody, for chiming in. Maybe we'll do this again at some point during quarantine. And hopefully quarantine ends sooner rather than later. And we can have more exciting things to talk about. But everybody, thanks for joining in. And hopefully we have a good season to look forward to.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Have a good evening.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so that does it for our first ever MUBB Happy Hour chat. I want to thank Phil Bush, Tim Blair, Alan Bykowski, Sam Newberry, Patrick Leary, and Ben Snyder. Be sure to follow those guys over at the Anonymous Eagle Podcast as well, and you can follow us all on Twitter. Rate, review, and subscribe to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that very much, and always go to cracksidewalks.com. Leave your comments there, and read all the articles that we have for you there. We'll do that happy hour again sometime soon. Not sure when, but we had a lot of fun this time. Hope you enjoyed it as well. Hope it got you through an hour of your quarantine. Until next time, everybody, seashells and balloons. Stay safe out there.